All right, we're back from break. This is Frank Maloney with Who's Talking, and with my partner here, Jim Hobgood. We're back and glad to welcome the Sabres, Chris Wright, to the show. Chris is the editor of thesabre.com, and he's one of our media partners. We're delighted to have him back with us. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm with you. How are you doing?
Very good. Glad that you could join us tonight, Chris. UVA's record stands at 3-5 overall, and the team needs to win 3 of 4 to be bowl eligible. What chance do you give them, and why?
I would say slim. And the main reason I would say that is because of who's on the schedule. We're looking at four teams with winning records. Miami's in the top 20, even though they're fighting some injuries right now this week. So that's going to be a hard one on the road. And clearly we know the end-of-the-season game against Virginia Tech is always a tough one, at least it has been this decade. So those two games right there both look like losses, and that already puts you out of bowl consideration if you can't win those two.
Well, the good news, he said slim. I was afraid he was going to say slim and none. So he eliminated the none part, so he's at least somewhat optimistic. Chris, good to have you with us tonight. A lot has been made about the 14 true freshmen that have played. Article in the Richmond paper today or yesterday indicating that that might have impact down the road. What are your thoughts on that?
My biggest issue with it is if you're going to go ahead and play guys, you need to play them. And what they've done is they've burned red shirts without playing the guys. You know, Obuchi on the offensive line, that was only his second game of the season this past weekend against Duke. So why pull a red shirt off of a guy for two games or for one game like it's been with a couple of the other players like Javonte Sparrow and some of those guys? You count snaps. The snaps are even lower than that. You know, so even if you've got a guy with three or four games, like a Drew Jarrett, who's kicking extra point, he's only playing a handful of snaps, and there's other people that could be doing that. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Can't argue with that. Why has UVA failed to establish or even attempt to establish the running game first with Georgia Tech and then most recently with the first half against Duke? And this has really bothered me a great deal. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're not the only one. A lot of people are very confused by it. We put up a stock report today just looking at the Duke game that, you know, my colleague Greg Waters, right?
Right.
And he was talking about a lot of their success against Duke, particularly early on, was running the football, but they don't really try to establish it. If you look at the first drive of the game, zero running attempts on their first drive, and that was after Duke had drove down and taken a 3-0 lead. They didn't even try the run on their first series. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, both of the running backs, Simpson and Rayshon Jackson, are averaging over 4 yards a carry. So, you know, statistically, they're doing fine. You have to wonder why they don't go to those guys more, because when they have, they've been successful, and they seem like they've won the games where they've really committed to it.
And that would have reduced some of the pressure on an injured Jameel Sewell, who's trying to, you know, find open receivers who just don't seem to be getting open.
Yeah, it would take the pressure off Jameel, who's hobbling around, like you said. It would also take some pressure off of these receivers who have been dropping a lot of balls. You know, maybe they feel like they've got to catch everything because every play, essentially, it seems like is a pass. So maybe it takes a little bit of pressure off of those guys, too.
Yeah, it seems like they've had a confused personality on offense throughout the year, and some of that may have been trying to switch to the spread. Who knows? I'll leave that to better experts than me. I guess the other question that might have lasting impact is recruiting. Recent weeks hasn't gone particularly well. Does that have something to do with the uncertainty relative to the leadership of the program?
It could. Surprisingly, late yesterday, a running back from Maryland committed. A kid named Kalik Shepherd, a 5'8 running back, committed to the team in the middle of all of this kind of swirling issues with the program. Now, he's been on multiple visits. He likes the school. He's got good grades, good qualifying scores, all that kind of stuff. So he's a UVA kind of kid.
Right.
It still surprises you to see him be got, you know, kind of break the streak in the middle of all the murmurs and so forth going on with the football program.
Isn't that young man the son of a former Redskin player?
Yes, he is.
I think that's an interesting thing, you know, the Jared Green connection.
Yeah,
with
and Minningfield, and, you know, I mean, I have a lot of grief that Coach Grow takes, and maybe some of it's deserved, but you have to – those people that know him well, meaning guys that have played in the NFL, seem to have confidence and faith in his ability to develop their sons.
While we're on this subject, do you think UVA will extend Coach Groh's contract if he wins six games or less?
No, I don't think the rest of the season has any bearing on what the decision will be when it is officially announced.
That leads me to wonder, you sort of give the sense that you already think the decision's been made.
From everything I understand, and this is not coming from the MeQ Center, all right, so I don't want to make it sound like I talked to the administration, but from everything I understand through some back-channel sources is the decision has already been made and that Virginia will be going in a different direction after the season.
Might the school offer Coach Groh, who's been a very loyal, long-tenured assistant coach, head coach, former player, might they offer him an administrative job within the athletic department?
You know, I think they're going to give Coach Groh a proper send-off. He's an alum. He's run a mostly clean program. He pretty much graduates most of the kids. They all stand up for him, at least publicly, both while playing and after playing. All those things add up to a guy that deserves a proper kind of ending to this. It did not go like anyone wanted it to go, starting with Coach Groh right on down. Everybody wanted to win more football games. But I think they're going to make it proper, you know, retired from college football, moved to administrative position, resigned to pursue other opportunities. There's going to be some sort of language in there that protects Coach Groh because of the way he's carried himself outside of winning and losing football games.
Absolutely.
Do you get the sense that there's any kind of very, very preliminary contact with, I know a lot of contacts inappropriate, but I guess people have a way of sort of putting out feelers to individuals, third parties, whatever. Is some of that being done, do you think?
I think any time a school is in this position, it's 100% given that the process starts before it should, maybe. You know what I mean? That's just, it's big business. You have to kind of go through the back channels, attorney talks, agent talks, you know, that kind of thing, short lists to make sure that you've done your due diligence and you don't try to throw something together in a three-week period after the season or – six-week period after the season. So you can rest assured that there's definitely some homework going on from, I would say, both sides, anybody that Virginia is interested in, as well as Virginia doing the homework themselves.
All right, if that is happening now and has been going on for X number of weeks, who might the front runners be?
Yeah, no, that's been the hot topic all season, really, but particularly this week on the Sabre message boards is who's next. You know, who are they looking at? You'll hear Mike London a lot. He's a guy right there in Richmond, has coached at Virginia two different times. His brother went here. His daughter played basketball here. So he has a lot of ties. So that name's going to come up a lot. Derek Dooley's an alum. Sean, roommate with Sean Moore, who was on your show last week. Coaches down at Louisiana Tech. He's got a big game with Boise State tomorrow night. So I'm sure a lot of people will be paying attention to that game since Boise's so highly ranked.
By the way, Chris, Sean Moore came out today in his blog, and that he said, if Coach Groh goes, look to Derek Dooley. And he gave a passionate pitch for his old roommate.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, this is a guy that played under George Welch. You know, he's got bloodlines back to the old Georgia coach, so he's got some bloodlines in football. He was part of an LSU staff, so he's been in big-time and around big-time football before kind of moving over to Louisiana Tech, where, you know, he's both the AD and the football coach, so he clearly can multitask. It'll be interesting to see kind of how he plays into this whole, you know, postseason puzzle, if he indeed does. But he's definitely a name that comes up a lot because of his ties to the program.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating several weeks and maybe next couple of months with regard to the Virginia football program and athletic department. And as we said earlier, it's a business decision. There's a lot of money involved in these programs and attempts by Virginia to put bodies in those seats. But, Chris, as always, thank you for joining us. Next time we have you on, we'll talk a little basketball, which will be maybe a more pleasant subject going forward. But thanks again for joining us, and we'll look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks for having me, and basketball starts next week, so I'm ready to go.
as am I.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to try to catch up with Dr. Jody Smith right now. We're going to try to get him on the line. So Jason, our engineer, is trying to hunt him down. In the meantime, I'm going to throw a couple things out to our listeners. First off, what are UVA's chances heading down to Miami for a 12 noon TV game? It's a Raycom game of the week. Miami is 6-2 overall, 3-2 in the conference, ranked anywhere from number 14 to number 17, depending upon your poll. However, they are banged up. They have been inconsistent this season, and Virginia did pound the daylights out of them 2 years ago down in the old stadium down there. Down there in the Orange Bowl. So I think that was 48-0. Was that score that?
Yeah, 48, or it was certainly a runaway the last time Virginia was down there. Surprisingly, I think in Coach Shannon's first year in Miami, where he was having a little bit of a tough time. I think we may have Dr. Smith on the line now to have an opportunity to talk with Jody. Jody, are you on?
Right here, Frank.
Well, this is Jim and Frank. We're glad you could join us for a couple of minutes just to take another look at sort of some of the injuries that the Virginia football program is having to deal with.
Yeah, the three main ones that I know the most about are the ones to our quarterback. Obviously, Sewell has kind of a laundry list, unfortunately, right now, and I think that's part of the reason he's been so ineffective. He's still really trying to recover from his ankle injury, and he's got, unfortunately, just a bad sprain. He's played through it the whole time, but it's really limiting his mobility, and that's part of the reason I think you've seen a change, and he's throwing the ball and not running nearly as much. Last game, as some sort of everyone saw, he took a good shot to the rib cage, and he had a combination of what really kind of a mild head injury, nothing too severe, but got a little cloudy, and so they kept him out for a couple of series, but also bruised his ribs, and so he'll probably play with a rib protector on for the next couple of weeks until that heals up. Matt Conrath has another severe ankle sprain. He does not, from what it sounds like, have the dreaded high ankle sprain that some of our tight ends have had to deal with over the last few years. The big difference there is for the normal ankle sprains or even severe or mild, you basically roll your ankle over and the ligaments on the outside of the ankle get stretched out. They're mostly pain related. That is, once athletes can get back and do what we call sports activities, that is, run, plant, cut, they can go back and play. They're not always as effective as they want to be, but at least they can play through them. The high ankle sprain involves the ligaments between the two bones of the lower leg, and that's much more severe. That's usually a 4 or 6 week injury, and it doesn't look like that's what he has. For Aaron Clark, finally got his one knee fixed, and now he's pretty severely sprained the other one. It's not an ACL injury like he had on the other side. It's an MCL sprain. That's typically 3 to 6 weeks to get back. He'll play in a brace for the rest of the year, and a lot of it's going to depend on how he feels as far as, again, football related activities. Can he plant and change direction well enough to play?
Well, the nature of football keeps you orthopedic docs very busy. a lot of injuries in your field of activity, and you're the expert on all this stuff. Unfortunately, sounds like some of these guys are just either going to have to play through pain or not going to play, period, the remaining four games.
Yeah, well, we obviously all hope that they can get back and play up to the level that they want to play at. I know it's really killing Jamil not to be able to do some of the stuff that he really wants to do.
Well, in addition to Jamil, another local product is Corey Mosley, one of the safeties, and he came off the field against Georgia Tech holding his arm with the dreaded shoulder, either partial separation or whatever. But I see him on this week's depth chart. They've got him listed in the two deep, but I didn't see much of him against Duke, and I think they might be protecting him for the game down at Miami and the other three games after that. In your experience, a shoulder injury like that, what does the player have to do to get back on the field and be effective?
A lot of it depends on what in your position that you play. Separations are different than dislocation. A dislocation involves the ball and the socket of the shoulder, whereas a separation really kind of involves the area where your collarbone attaches to your shoulder blade. Most of the time, much like the ankle sprains we talked about earlier, it's mostly pain-related. For a thrower, it can be devastating because it can take a long time to get back from that. And if you all remember, Matt Schaub had a shoulder separation before the South Carolina game a few years ago. That was obviously very devastating to the team. But Corey's a defensive player, and every time he makes a tackle, he's going to feel that on that shoulder. So what they do is they have special what they call shock pads. Sometimes you'll see lacrosse players wear similar things, but they go over and they try to disperse the forces so that it doesn't hit right on that joint, and it allows them to play. But really, I mean, it's basically it's how much pain can you tolerate, and as long as it's not too severe an injury, you know, he'll be able to go out there whenever he can. But you can imagine trying to stick your shoulder into a 250-pound tailback when it hurts. Sometimes you're a little reluctant to do that.
Yeah, Jody, we appreciate you once more joining us tonight. We would remind our listeners out there, hopefully you won't, but if you ever do have orthopedic issues, we want you to visit our friends at West End Orthopedic. Dr. Smith and his associates will certainly take care of you. But, Jody, we appreciate your calling in, giving some of our listeners a little update on where some of these players are physically, and we'll hope for better results on Saturday down in Miami. But in the meantime, we appreciate your joining us. Look forward to having you again. In the meantime, folks, we will go to break. When we return, we'll have our fall sports update. We'll talk a little further about the Miami football game, and we'll preview next week's show.